Penguin Random House Audio presents Broken Glass, Mies van der Rohe, Edith Farnsworth, and the Fight Over a Modernist Masterpiece by Alex Beam. Read for you by Kimberly Farr. To Edith. The old Mies friends. They didn't want to hear that the house had drawbacks, especially where it was such a milestone in architecture. Then they wound up for the counterpunch. Do you know what the problem was? It was Edith. Edith wanted Mies, and only because she wanted him did he get the job. And then later, when he would not marry her, she got mad and hit back. Art Institute of Chicago Oral Interview with Werner Buch, architect and student of Mies van der Rohe, January 25, 1989. Prologue. This is Mies, darling. Mies van der Rohe and Edith Farnsworth met at a small dinner party in Chicago during the winter of 1945. Gallery owner Georgia Lingefeld shared a downtown apartment in the Irving, an elegant low-rise on the north side, with her friend Ruth Lee. Lingefeld invited three guests who lived nearby on Chicago's affluent Gold Coast: Mies, his girlfriend Laura Marks, and Dr. Farnsworth, a physician, art collector, and poetry aficionado. While Edith slipped off her overcoat in the foyer, Lingefeld smiled graciously and introduced her to the guest of honor. This is Mies, darling. The dinner conversation stumbled forward. Mies, who had immigrated to the United States from Germany 7 years before, still hadn't mastered English. He never would. Farnsworth later recalled that the women chatted among ourselves around the granite form of Mies. When Marks and the hostesses repaired to the kitchen to wash dishes, Farnsworth conversed with Mies. She knew he was a famous architect, but knew nothing of his work. Recruited to revamp the architecture department of the Illinois Institute of Technology, Mies had yet to complete a building or residence in the United States. Mies had no idea who Edith might be, but she was the kind of woman he had been attracted to before. Intelligent, stylish, and not a settle-downer. The unmarried Farnsworth was 42 years old and had abandoned a promising career as a violinist to study medicine. Mies, who lived alone, had sampled domesticity, and it didn't agree with him. He'd abandoned his wife and three daughters in wartime Germany. As a married man, he was a caricature, according to a German friend. There was something about him that thrived on freedom, required exemption from convention. Farnsworth told Mies that she had recently bought a parcel of land about an hour southwest of the city in Plano, Illinois. It was a gorgeous meadow sloping down to the meandering Fox River. She was hoping to build a small weekend cottage there to escape the demands of her research and clinical work as a kidney specialist at Passavant Memorial Hospital. She wanted to fill her tired, dull Sundays, as she described her off-call weekends in Chicago. She intended to spend $8,000 to $10,000, the equivalent of about $110,000 today. I wonder if there might be some young man in your office who would be willing to design a small studio weekend house worthy of that lovely shore, she asked. I would love to build any kind of house for you, Mies replied. Coming from this taciturn, massive stranger, as she described him later, the effect was tremendous, like a storm, a flood, or other act of God. Mies had that effect on people. 60 years old and already feeling the effects of the arthritis that would later cripple him, He still had an oracular presence that particularly appealed to women. Meese was the epitome of old-fashioned masculinity, according to Farnsworth's contemporary, the curator Catherine Koo. His deep, slightly gravelly voice, his slow, accented speech, his elimination of small talk, and his quiet self-assurance all contributed to this image. Several years later, Meese struggled to recapture details of that fateful conversation. He remembered discussing an unusual, non-standard project with his prospective client. She knew that she would get a house that was not normal, Meese said. When we talked the first time about the house at that dinner party, I told her I would not be interested in a normal house. But if it could be fine and interesting, then I would do it. Meese and Edith would soon make architectural history. The Farnsworth house was indeed fine. It wasn't normal, and it was captivating. The house has found its place in the architectural canon, in the slide deck of almost every serious introductory architecture lecture in the world. Architect critic David Holofka has called the Farnsworth the urtext of modern residential architecture. Ernest Hemingway famously wrote, "All modern American literature comes from one book by Mark Twain called Huckleberry Finn." It might as accurately be said that all modern houses come from Mies van der Rohe's Farnsworth house. Holofka later elaborated, "Icons like Le Corbusier's Villa Savoie are equally famous, but it was Mies's unerring grasp of the irreducible and universal that make his Farnsworth house concept primary and durable," he said. It plugs into ideas as old as the human impulse toward the primitive hut and as current as anti-stuff crusader Marie Kondo. It's both groundbreaking and rooted in the fundamental psychological problem of the house: how to resolve our need for shelter with the contradictory human desire for space, to be outside in nature, our evolutionary place, where, in many ways, we still feel most at home. The critic Paul Goldberger once remarked that there seems at first to be almost nothing to the Farnsworth house, a house so light it might float away. The phrase, "nothing to it," invokes Mies's famous dictum of beinahe nichts, almost nothing, his idea that architecture, at its best, should be almost invisible. The Farnsworth house left other architects little to do except to try to make even more perfect that which was already perfected, according to iconoclastic British architectural critic Rainer Banham. Invisible, irreproducible, and uninhabitable? For complicated reasons involving money and a scarcity of materials, the Farnsworth house took forever to build. Conceived in 1945, it wasn't completed until late 1951. For most of that time, Meese and Edith were close friends, intellectual soulmates, and, briefly, lovers, closely attuned to each other's aspiration to create the most important house in the world. Then Edith moved in, and Meese moved on. Alienated by cost overruns, she eventually paid $74,000 for the house, almost 10 times her original price tag. Farnsworth couldn't abide the myriad problems of her one-of-a-kind architectural gem. The roof leaked. Heating oil smudged the windows. Meese eschewed air conditioning, so the house broiled in the hot Illinois summers. "Less is more," is the most famous quotation attributed to Mies van der Rohe, a Delphic formula that has been adulated, debated, and inevitably mocked by his revisionist adversaries.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?